Don't ever let them bring you down, cause then you be on a level.
Listen, I'm never giving up.
Stand your ground, don't be too comfortable and too settled.
Listen, I'm never giving up.
When you hit rock bottom, it's only one way to go.
Listen, I'm never giving up.
Everybody got problems, how you handle them, no.
Yeah. Listen.
Hey, I'm John.
I'm Jonathan.
Welcome to the formula.
Hey guys, this is a very special episode for me because we are very excited to have our next guest to the formula. We have a specialist in emotional intelligence communications. She's an entrepreneur, visionary, author, and a dear friend of mine. Please welcome Miss Emotional Intelligence herself, Brittany Nicole Connor Savada.
How's it going, Brittany? This is John.
Hi. Hi, guys.
Yeah, we're very excited to have you, Brittany. Shoot, man, I've known Brittany for quite some time.
We go back
4 years, Britt? Three, four years?
I think it's going on five,
maybe
actually.
Five?
Yeah.
Yeah, man, so we've known each other and we've, we worked together professionally and, you know, just... When she came onto our team, it was like a breath of fresh air, like real talk. Like she was the young energy and she was just really intelligent. You could tell from day one coming onto our team with 'cause we have a bunch of older people, more mature people on our team. And what she brought to the team is like a lot of youth, a lot of energy.
Mm-hmm.
A lot of thinking outside the box, and it challenged some people, right, Brittany? It challenged some people, but it was something we really needed, like to bring the team together. I really appreciated her, and working with her was a pleasure. And then just to see her grow and have that vision, you know, she told me about her vision of starting her own business and doing her own thing, and been working in the field of emotional intelligence and working with the youth. It was a great vision, and I was like, you know, I'll support that no matter what you do. We gonna support.
So you knew eventually she would break up with you.
Oh, absolutely.
And go her separate way.
Absolutely. I knew that the divorce was coming. You know,
work life.
I knew the divorce was coming, and I knew that, like, she was gonna have to teach me emotional intelligence to get through that divorce. So
it was tough.
It was a process, you know, and then she had to let her fly, and she is doing great, man. You can really see what she's doing. Because she's out there, you know, she's meeting with CEOs,
mm-hmm.
you know, she has CEOs as mentors, right, Brittany?
Yeah, I've got some great mentors.
It's awesome, man. Just to hear her story and what she's done to get to where she is right now.
Cool. So let's get into it. Brittany, can you explain to us what emotional intelligence is?
Sure. So let's take it back a bit. So emotional intelligence has been around since the early 90s. So two founders, Peter Salovey and John Mayer, not the artist John Mayer, different John Mayer.
I was going to ask.
So they coined the term back in, I think it was early 1990. But most people know of Daniel Goleman as being the quote-unquote father of emotional intelligence. But really, Daniel Goleman was just studying their research and then wrote the book Emotional Intelligence. And that's why Daniel Goleman is kind of known for emotional intelligence, even though he's not the founder of emotional intelligence. So emotional intelligence has four primary components: so self-awareness, self-regulation, social awareness, for social management and empathy. So those are the primary components, and different people break it down in different ways, but it's all essentially the same. It's pretty much understanding your own emotions, the source of those emotions, how your emotions and reactions are impacting other people, having a realistic perception of yourself, which a lot of people struggle with. So do other people view you the same way you view yourself? And then can you pick up on those social cues from others and be able to genuinely and authentically like empathize with them, not sympathize? So that is, in essence, what emotional intelligence is.
That's awesome. And what drew you to this field?
I was crazy. I struggled for the longest time. Like as a kid, I suffered from anxiety, like severe anxiety. And I was always told like, it's just part of, you know, your genes. My mom, my aunt, my grandma, like everybody in my family, my cousins suffered from anxiety or depression, and everybody was on medication for it. So I just thought, oh, well, that's exactly what I need. I need medication. So my mom took me to the doctor. I got put on anti-anxiety medicine at the age of 15. Mm. And I just like, I noticed I took my problems out on everyone. I was never the problem. Everyone around me was the problem. And it wasn't until I got into a new relationship, moved to a new city, that I realized those problems followed me. And I was the common denominator. Like I was the common issue there. Like it wasn't the people in my past. And then I had to come to terms with that. For a while, I denied it. But then I started to have severe panic attacks in my early 20s, and they would be triggered out of nowhere. And it felt like I was dying. I remember driving down a road in uptown Charlotte, and my vision started to go black while I'm driving, and I couldn't see. And it was terrifying because there's nowhere to pull over. When you're in the middle of a city, there's nowhere to pull over. So I had to find a parking garage to go into and just kind of come down from this panic attack. Just tell myself, you're not dying. You're going to be okay. Take deep breaths. But it was happening so frequent that I was like, I have to do something else about it. And at the time I was in school for psychology, and one of my courses that semester, I believe, was positive psychology. But I started to practice mindfulness and becoming aware of my thoughts and not being judgmental of my thoughts, but just being very objective to how I was thinking and feeling. And after I graduated college, I kept doing a lot of reading on self-help books and learning about mindfulness. And then I came across Daniel Goleman's book, Emotional Intelligence. And I continued to digest all of this information and apply it, because that's the key, is read it, but apply it, because it's information until you turn it into transformation, right? And once I started to apply all this stuff, I was able to get off my anxiety medicine. I no longer had panic attacks, and I had a completely different outlook towards stressors in my life and how I handled situations. So that's the long story of how I got into this. Mm-hmm.
So really quick, you say you took medication. Do you feel like that helped, or do you feel like it didn't help at all?
The medication?
Yeah.
It did. But the thing about medication, and I'm not going to tell people to get off medication, right? But, I felt like it was temporary for me. I think that it helped with the symptoms of anxiety, but it didn't take care of the underlying issue. And I think that's why a lot of people who find themselves on anti-anxiety or antidepressants, like, yeah, it helps, but you're not yourself. It kind of helps mimic some of the hormones that you're not producing. And when I say you're not producing, oftentimes it's because your thoughts create a reality. Your thoughts actually create this chemical soup in your brain that affects everything else. So when people say, well, I have a chemical imbalance, okay, that's true, you do, but is it self-induced? And I feel like the majority of these cases of people on these medications, it's self-induced. It's our thoughts. It's our inability to understand our emotions and, you know, having a negative perspective of the world. It will create the unpleasant feelings that we have.
Mm-hmm.
So for me, it was a temporary solution. Mm-hmm. It helped, but it wasn't solving the problem.
Yeah, and this is one of the major themes that continue to come up, and you mentioned it a few times, is, and one of the pillars of actually emotional intelligence is self-awareness. And I think that's one of the biggest things that we have to do, you know, because we all have gone through something in our childhood that affect us forever, for the rest of our lives, right? Some type of a trauma, albeit from a parent or family member, or just an experience at school with our peers. But we have to be self-aware of those things that happen to us, and be self-aware that, you know, we do have a situation or a mental situation that we do have to deal with. And right. I think that that's one of the major things that we have to really, mm-hmm. really deal with.
It's so funny because, you know, people try to control things that they can't control, but they don't try to control the things that they do have control over.
Mm.
So they try to control the situation,
mm-hmm.
but they don't try to control their reaction to that situation. And it should be the reverse.
Right. And that's something that very successful guys told me all the time, is you can control your actions and your attitudes. Yep. You can't control anything else, right?
Yep.
And, you know, just listen to your story, your background. You know, I know a lot of this, but just listening to it, and then it brought back the day at work. It brought back that day at work when you did go through that episode, I will call it. Can you recall that day and how that made you feel? And because it was at work, and like, can you recall that day, how you made you feel? How did you come out of that?
Which episode are you referring to?
I didn't know it was multiple. just when we had to call the ambulance out.
Oh, gotcha. Yeah, so that wasn't actually a panic attack. That was actually my heart. I don't know what set it off, but my heart just started racing, and it was at like 155 beats per minute,
mm-hmm.
for 5.5 hours. So I forget what they call that, but yeah, that wasn't a panic attack that was triggered from that.
Okay.
But yeah, cool. But that was still pretty scary.
Yeah, that was very scary. Cause like when you was talking, I thought about it and my heart dropped. Like just thinking about that day, because I was really concerned.
Yeah, that was scary. But you know, the crazy thing was, like, I was at first, like, I was really upset. Like, I was crying, you know, like, what's going on with me? Why is this happening?
Mm-hmm.
But once I got into the ambulance, like, I was kind of, I found that calm. Like, look, whatever's going to happen is going to happen. If you start to stress about it, you're going to make it worse. So you just need to relax and control what you can, which at the time was my breathing and my mindset. It didn't change my heart rate though, but it did kind of help ease that anxiety that came with, like, I don't know what's going on.
So you mentioned empathy earlier. How does one draw the line? Is there a line between empathy and being an enabler? And how does one, like, make that distinction?
Yeah, I think they're completely different, actually. So when I think of an enabler, I'm thinking of someone that's like, oh, it's okay. You can't help it. It's not your fault, right? And so it gives that person that justification. Is that the direction you're kind of going with it? Is that what you're thinking too? Yeah. And so with empathy, it's not about necessarily condoning poor behavior or coddling anyone. It's understanding what is that person feeling and how can I relate to that? And we oftentimes say, I understand, which is, I cannot stand when somebody tells me they understand. Because you don't understand. You've never, and I'm sure you can totally relate to this, especially with the Black Lives Matter movement, people saying, I understand. It's like, no, you can't understand. You have never been in my shoes. You cannot understand. You can empathize with me. And the difference is we all have very similar emotions. So we can empathize with their emotions, not the situation. I can never understand what you're experiencing. But if you tell me I am afraid, then I can pull from it an experience that I've had where I am afraid. And I know how that feels in my body. And I can say, wow, that's tough. I know what it's like to be afraid.
Mm-hmm.
I think that is where we need to take I understand out of our vocabulary completely and say, and how does that make you feel? What are you feeling? And then once we identified those feelings, then pull from our experiences where we've had those feelings. That's empathy.
Wow. That's probably the best way I've ever heard that explained. Like, really.
Yeah. And you mentioned Black Lives Matter. Is that, I mean, can you explain why it seems like people are so triggered by just the phrase Black Lives Matter?
Yeah, I think it's because so many people are, I mean, 90% of people lack emotional intelligence, or at least a moderate level of emotional intelligence. Most people have very low EQ. And it's a skill that needs to be developed. So it's not inherent, like, IQ. And I think that we've been taught at a very young age that this is what you should say, this is how you should react, and we follow this social script. And we always want people to understand us, and we don't often take the time to understand people because we're very egocentric in this society. So when people get triggered with Black Lives Matter, I think it's because they are interpreting that in the way that they want to interpret it. And if it goes against their security, then they're like, no, no, no. You know, the point is nobody's taking the time to empathize. Nobody's taking the time to come from a place of understanding. They just want to prove how that other person is wrong and how they are right. And if we stay in that state of mind where I always have to prove to you why I'm right and you're wrong, then we're never going to get anywhere. And I'm not going to lie, like, I didn't understand it several years ago. I was like, but all lives matter. And it wasn't until this happened recently with George Floyd, and then I was seeing the signs. We never said all lives didn't matter, but we're saying Black lives do matter. And that was, when I saw that, that was one of the first times that it clicked for me. So I don't think I think there's two people in this area. There's people who just don't fully understand it yet. And then there's people who are just very resistant to it because they're, you know, they've just been brought up to say, well, I don't think your life does matter as much, and I think you're making a big deal out of something that you shouldn't, right? And those people are not coming from a place of understanding, and it's often coming from a place of hate. So, you know, things are complicated, right? It's not just super simple, but I think I just went on a tangent with that, and I don't remember the original question.
No, it's cool. No, I think actually, you got it.
You did answer that.
You really did, yeah.
Very eloquently. And how do you identify a lack of emotional intelligence?
Just open your eyes and look around you.
I mean, you said 90% of, you said 90% of us lack emotional intelligence?
Lack moderate or high emotional intelligence. Most people have low EQ. And I had low EQ before I started practicing it. Because again, it's a skill set, right? And we're just not taught how to be emotionally intelligent. And people don't want to hear that they have low EQ because they're like, no, I have high EQ. Well, most people that say that probably have low EQ. And low EQ, like if you've ever heard someone say whatever they want to say, like it just flies out of their mouth. They're like, well, it's my right. It's my freedom of speech. But then you say something and they get super offended. That's a sign of low EQ. Like they feel like they can say whatever they want, but you can't say whatever you want to them. Or they'll say, I don't care how you feel. I don't care what you think. That's not my problem. Any of those phrases is a sign of low EQ. If you can't hold, or if you can't manage your anger appropriately, suppressing is not managing anger. That is just another negative way. You're internalizing it instead of projecting it onto other people. So suppression or projection of our unpleasant emotions is also a sign of low EQ, not having an accurate perception of yourself. Have you ever been talking to someone like at a networking event? I know none of us like have really experienced that recently this year, but you're talking to someone and you have to go. And so you start positioning your body, like you're turning away from them and you're hoping they're going to pick up on that social cue. Like, okay, I got to go now. Like you're turning away and they just follow you and they just keep talking because they lack that social awareness and self-awareness that this person needs to go. So there's so many signs, like there's a laundry list of signs of emotional or a lack of emotional intelligence everywhere. Calling people names. I mean, if you just look at politics these days, like, I don't think anyone, and I'm talking about both sides of
the aisle.
I think both sides of the aisle is lacking. You have one side that is very outspoken and says what's ever top of mind, but emotional intelligence can also be very manipulative, right? So I think it's on both sides of the aisle, and we need to demand change instead of saying, well, we got to pick one of the lesser of the two evils. Because if we keep doing that, then we're headed down a bad path.
Yeah, because it seems like each of the last couple of elections, we've been saying the lesser of the two evils. But we're electing the lesser of the two evils.
But they're both evil. So it's like, are we getting anywhere if they're both evil? So that's what I'm saying.
Like, we elected those two to be
competing to
be the lesser of the
Doesn't make any sense.
Doesn't make any sense, man. As a nation, we're lacking.
They feel like they have to. They feel like they're stuck. Like, well, I don't have a choice. You do.
Right.
But it takes like a large majority to realize we don't have to deal with any of this. We, the people, make up this nation, not these elected officials, right? And until we wake up to that and start really trying to make big change happen, I have a lot to say about that, but that's not what this conversation is about, so...
I'm going to make this conversation about me a little bit, okay?
Sure.
Because that's a big problem of mine. Like, well, not that, but a big problem of mine is I feel like just talking to you about this and everything, I feel like I have that moderate to, you know, moderate emotional intelligence, right? And when I deal with people that don't display that same intelligence to me, it changes my outlook on them and it changes the way I react to them. So right. when if you're talking to someone like me and you're coaching someone like me, like, because I'm reactionary. I'm very nice. And you know me, I'm very yeah. nice to people. I go out of my way to make people feel comfortable. But then yeah. when I spend enough time with someone and I see that they're not appreciating what I'm doing for them or, you know, doing for them to make them feel comfortable and the things that I'm doing to try to further our relationship or whatever like that, I then say, okay, so you don't care. I don't care. So what's that deficiency in me?
Oh, wow. Okay. You want me to just call you out, huh?
Yeah, absolutely. See, I'm emotionally intelligent enough to know that I have issues. And like, I can take, and that's another thing, like, I can take constructive criticism. You know, I don't know if that's the athlete in me. It may be because, you know, my family can't do that.
You think you could take it, but we'll see how this goes.
Oh, yeah.
First off, I could never be a ref. I would lose my mind. I would have so much anxiety in me and rage from angry parents and fans. There's no way.
Yeah. You definitely have to have some level of emotional intelligence to be an official.
Regulation at least, right? Yeah. At least regulation.
Right.
No, it's funny that you say that though, because I just want to share something. I remember, I don't know who you're on the phone with. You were on the phone with someone at work and it wasn't work related. You're taking it was a personal call, but you were having some problems with them and you're just laughing on the phone. And you're just talking to them. I thought it was a great conversation. And you get off the phone and you're like, man, I tell you. And you just start laughing again. And they were upsetting you. They were saying something. I can't remember what it was. But the way that you handle that, I'm like, there's no way that I could laugh at that. You know, and you weren't doing it in a mocking way. You just thought it was amusing that right. these people could be so ignorant. I wish I could handle it that way. So you've got me on that one.
That gets me in trouble too, though.
Oh, really?
Yeah, oh, absolutely. My laughter gets me in trouble a lot.
Oh, wow. That surprises me. Interesting. But back to your question. So, like, no, I get it. Like, it is frustrating when you're trying to bend to make other people comfortable and then you don't feel like they appreciate or acknowledge what you're doing for them, right?
Mm-hmm.
And in a sense, like, and I know you're a very selfless person, but in a sense, whenever we do stuff like that and then we're expecting, we have that expectation that they show us appreciation, in a sense, that is a bit selfish, right?
Mm-hmm.
Because we're not accepting that regardless if they change for me, I'm doing this for them without anything in return expected. But then when we have that expectation, like, well, they should notice that I'm doing this. Well, they should show appreciation. Then it kind of goes back to the ego.
Mm-hmm.
But what I would say, because I feel the same way, and I feel like it's supernatural to feel that way, is having that conversation. So instead of letting that turn into a potential negative narrative where you start to have resentment for that person, just saying, look, you know, I feel like I'm doing this and I'm not seeing that in return from you. And I don't know if you're aware of that. I don't think you're doing it intentionally, but it does make me feel a certain way, whatever, if you want to label those feelings. It does make me feel X, Y, Z whenever I feel like I am bending, and you're not meeting me halfway. And go ahead and addressing that when you start to feel that, because that will prevent that resentment building up inside of you towards that person.
Okay.
Because then we can spin stuff in our heads like, well, you know, they're this kind of person, or they're doing it intentionally, and we have no facts to back that up. We have no evidence to back that up. We're just making these assumptions,
mm-hmm.
and that can get us in trouble.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. Well, thank you for psychoanalyzing Jonathan for us. I really appreciate that.
Yeah, happy to.
So just like Jonathan came to you for help, when people come to you for help, like, what's the most common, like, question or common issue that people come to you about?
I think now it's just stress and anxiety and the fear of the unknown. They want to be happy. They don't want to be stressed out. And then it's weird because there's only a select few that actually continue to work with me, because once I tell them that it's kind of their responsibility to change that, like, so why are you allowing yourself to be anxious? Why are you allowing yourself to be stressed? They're like, I'm not doing that. This is doing that. And that's doing that. Like, so how do you explain that two different people can address that in two different ways or have two different perspectives, right? If a situation stresses you out, then that situation should stress everyone out. So it's really, you're allowing things to stress you. You're allowing things to make you anxious. You are allowing that to happen.
Mm-hmm.
So once it becomes their responsibility to change that, a lot of people will just completely drop off because they don't want to deal with it. They don't want to realize that it's them that has to change, not someone else.
Man, that's money. That's money. And I'm telling you guys, if you enjoying this, please go and get her book. Her book is coming out very soon. It's The EQ Deficiency.
Yeah, a month from today.
Yes.
But you could pre-order it, right?
Yeah, it's available right now for pre-order on Amazon.
Yes. So definitely go out and get her book. You can also subscribe to her fan page on Facebook. And, you know, definitely go get this book. It's going to be amazing. I know she's going to be awesome. So
thanks.
Yeah, absolutely.
Thanks, buddy.
And what are some effective communication tips one can use in a romantic relationship to resolve conflict?
That's a good question. That's a really good question.
Mm-hmm.
There's two things. Once things go back to whatever people call normal
right.
in the next year,
mm-hmm.
you know, oftentimes we project our emotions. And this, you can take this for romantic relationships with your kids, with work, it can be applied across the board. But notice whenever you are feeling triggered, right? All these things are building up over time. Your commute to work can be stressful. Something happens at work and you're holding it in and you're holding it in. And then you get home and usually it's the people that you care about the most mm-hmm. that you release that energy onto. So emotion means energy in motion. So whatever you're feeling that you're not controlling and altering is going to be projected onto other people if you don't handle it. And again, oftentimes it's our loved ones that receive that. So being aware of that and taking control of that instead of, because it's not the dishes in the sink that usually cause you to lose it mm-hmm. or the mess around the house. It's all those other things that built up. And now the dishes or the mess around the house or whatever is the straw that broke the camel's back. It's the thing that sets you over the edge. So
Breach.
Handling that before you come in the door, and then also noticing, again, self-awareness of what am I feeling? If you're feeling anger, then why are you feeling anger? Address the need behind that emotion, because every unpleasant emotion behind that, there's an unmet need. So instead of addressing the need, we oftentimes are just vomiting these emotions onto people, and that they're not able to help us with the need if we're putting them in a state of defense, right? When people see your emotion, they become defensive
mm-hmm.
and everything else goes out the window. They don't really care how you're feeling because now you're just attacking them. So that would be my key, is understand your unpleasant emotions and the source of those emotions, the real source, and take care of that. So that way you're not projecting that onto other people.
Man, so many people need this sometimes. And I know I need this. Like, well, you are bringing it, Brittany.
Well, you're in a marriage. So yes, you could definitely use this. Someone like me that's single, I mean, I don't know what to do.
All right, help him out, Brittany. Help him out, Brittany.
Listen. Ask questions. When I hated the dating scene, I really just
that's what I'm saying. Like, it's dating. It's the whole date, just the idea of being in a relationship. It just seems so annoying to me. You know what I mean? Yeah. I hate to put it that way, but
it's, and then don't be in it. But, like, that's the thing. Don't feel like you have to be what society tells you. Like, oh, you need to
see, I knew I wasn't crazy. Like, I'm okay with being single. I'm an introvert and I'm antisocial. So it kind of makes sense for me to be single, right?
I mean, if that's what you're comfortable with, then do it. It doesn't have to make sense to the world. I mean, Jonathan, you know Andrew from work.
Yes.
He's 40 this year and he's single and he's like, you know what? I tried the dating thing. I like to have my space. I like to do what I want to do when I want to do it. Mm-hmm. I don't want to deal with anyone else's drama. And I'm like, then do that. Yep. Like, no one says that you have to get into a relationship and get married and have kids and buy the house with the white picket fence. Like, nobody says that. And then the people that do that because they feel like that's what's expected of them usually aren't happy. Mm-hmm. They project this happiness and have to present to the world like, oh, look at what me and my husband did this weekend. And they're really not happy, though. It's like they feel like they're just running this script. So if that's what you're content with, then do it. And don't feel guilty about it. Don't feel like you have to explain yourself to anyone.
All right. So I feel like I'm lazy when it comes to relationships. Is something wrong with me? Am I bugging? Do I have low EQ? Well, like, or am I okay?
I mean, when you say lazy, I don't know what
I mean. I don't want to do the work. Like, you know how they say, oh, you got to work on your relationship. I don't want to do any of that. Whatever that entails, I don't want to do no work at all.
So that describes my husband. So here's the thing. You have to find the person that is fine with that. So okay. My husband and I, we've been together almost 4 years this November. And I am not a needy person. Like, we don't do Christmas gifts. We don't do anniversary gifts. We don't do birthday gifts. He'll wish me happy birthday. Sometimes, like, it'll be 1 or 2 in the evening before he remembers it's my birthday. But, like, the thing is, I don't need that from him. I used to be extremely needy. And if you didn't do special things for me, like, I got personally offended. I don't need that anymore. Like, I am happy and content with myself. And if I want something, I'll get it myself. I don't need him to do that for me. And he is just a very down-to-earth, genuine person. And he cares about me, but he has not read my book yet. He's not watched a lot of my interviews that I've had. And I don't take it personally because I'm just like, I know he loves me. I know he cares. So I think you just, if you want to be in a relationship, which you don't need to be, but if you want to be, you have to find someone that's compatible with that, that doesn't care about all those things. I think if you genuinely love someone, the material things and doing all that stuff doesn't matter. And the things that you do for them, you'll do it out of genuine desire.
Well, Brittany, right. Thank you for saying that. That really helps me a lot. And wish me luck, because me finding a young lady like yourself who's low maintenance, as you kind of, you know, reference to, wish me luck on that.
I'm wishing you all the best. Good luck.
So would you say there is a darker side of emotional intelligence?
Oh yeah, 100%. Kind of like we're talking about with politics. You know, there's politicians that are definitely pushing their own agenda that have high emotional intelligence. And I'm not saying it's all politicians. I'm just saying that you can see this in politics especially, right? Because they'll kiss the babies, they'll shake the hands, they know what to say. They can read people's body language. They can maneuver and say the right things to the right people. And that is emotional intelligence. They are self-aware of what they're doing. Now, a lot of these people probably don't know how to regulate their emotions. If you would see them behind closed doors, they probably throw hissy fits and lose it. But in terms of social awareness, they've got it going, you know, in terms of that. And that can be very dangerous because we can start to trust people that don't have our best interests at heart, but do a really great job of presenting that they do. So I would say that would be the darker side of emotional intelligence. And that's why if you look at my book, the subtitle is How Emotional Intelligence and Compassion Can Change the World, right? Because I think that to be emotionally intelligent and genuine, you have to incorporate compassion and understanding. Otherwise, it can be very manipulative.
Cool. And where do you feel the lines between using emotional intelligence effectively and being manipulative?
I mean, anytime you're doing it to get what you want out of someone or to get someone to change their mind and be persuasive, but not in a way that's helping them, but in a way, again, that's very selfish. Making people feel bad about certain things, like just manipulating other people's emotions. If it's in it for you and not in the interest of the other person, or if you're doing it to support a different group, like pushing an agenda for whatever it is, but it's not taking into account that person's needs, then that's where you've crossed the line.
All right, so what are some of the major differences in using emotional intelligence in your personal life as opposed to your professional life? Or is there like some overlap there?
Can you repeat that one more time? It was a little muffled on my end.
Oh, sorry. What are some of the differences in using emotional intelligence in your personal life as opposed to your professional life? Or is there some overlap?
There's definitely overlap. If you learn emotional intelligence, you're going to use it no matter who you're speaking with, whether it's a 3-year-old, whether it's a CEO, whether it's your spouse, it really doesn't matter. But the benefits of EQ, that's what I'd like to kind of talk about. This is a very intangible skill. And that's why it's super hard for a lot of businesses and CEOs to take it seriously, which now, especially with this pandemic, I was speaking with other people in my industry and they're like, my business just like blew up during this pandemic because now the house is on fire and people need what we offer. A lot of people try to say, I don't need that. I don't need to bring emotions into business, right? I just need to be analytical. And well, here's the thing. We're emotional creatures. We have to pass the emotional brain before we can get to the rational brain. That's just the way our brains are structured. So if you want to be a high performer, if you want to have, if you want to get a higher return on investment, employee engagement, if you want to manage your retention levels, then you need emotional intelligence to do that. You can have a $1 million business without a lot of EQ, but that same business turned over to someone that has high EQ could be a multi-$1 million business just versus single digits, right? EQ is a turbo booster. So a study, it was done in like 2009. So it's, you know, 11 years old. I think they interviewed like 42,000 workers across various industries. And they found that on average, people that had high emotional intelligence earned an average of $29,000 more a year than those who did not have high emotional intelligence. So people need extrinsic motivation to be emotionally intelligent. There you go. They also outperform people with IQ by 128%. And they're just more resilient. So they bounce back from situations far more quickly than those that don't. And so when we're experiencing these states of stress and anxiety that we have today, and that could be a commute to work, getting stressed out. So that releases cortisol in our bodies. And that cortisol is a stress hormone. But when we are in that state of stress, our rational brain literally checks out. If you've ever given a presentation at work or wherever you had to speak in public and you knew the information, but then you completely blanked whenever you got in front of people, that's why. Because you're in that fight or flight response. You're in that stress state and you can't process information. So if we're experiencing these triggers, like the commute to work that stresses us out, then when we get to work and something's on our desk and we've got like deadlines and all of this stuff, and we don't have emotional intelligence to handle that, then we're not going to be able to perform our task effectively. We're going to increase the amount of risk involved in our work. We're probably going to make more errors. We are not going to be able to collaborate and communicate effectively to other people. So that's kind of how it plays into our work environment, but that's also at home. If we're stressed out, we can't give ourselves to that person that we're with to truly listen to their needs and their problems because we're so focused on ours. We get into that self-preservation mode, which makes us more egocentric. So everything feeds into one another. It'll show up differently, but it's the same techniques, it's the same strategies across the board.
Mm-hmm. And just kind of going back to the coronavirus, and much more people being at home, and you hear and you read about the increase of domestic violence, and definitely this is a subject that everyone needs at this time because of that situation. Everyone is kind of shut up in the house and have to be around people and their family is a lot more than they usually are. How can people at home kind of help with that? And then also like some tips, being at home with our kids a whole lot longer than we are used to, some tips that we can actually teach our children about emotional intelligence.
So this is a tricky question answer because it's not simple, right? We get into these situations like we're in a toxic relationship, and you know, before we may be able to escape and go to our friend's house or hang out with family or just find a way to avoid that situation.
Go to the bar.
Which is unavoidable now. And we can't avoid it now. So now we're stuck, but not only are we stuck with that person, we're stuck with ourselves. And I think that's really hard for people is because we try to escape ourselves too. And we don't want to deal with these underlying issues that we have. And we're faced or we're forced to look in the mirror, and that can be very unpleasant. And then because we don't have emotional intelligence, we project all of those insecurities, all of those feelings towards of ourselves onto other people. So to say, how do you manage that? If both people in the home lack that emotional intelligence, which in relationships where there is domestic violence, I'm going to say that both people lack because you have one person who doesn't realize that they're worth more to get out of that relationship. And then you have the other person who is the instigator who lacks that awareness that they can't control their emotions. So it's on both parties. And we get stuck in this negative feedback loop, this toxic feedback loop, where if we can never escape that state of stress, then we can't address it. So to say, like, what tips do you have? That's really hard for me to say, because I could say, well, become more self-aware, label your feelings, but they're not in an emotional state to address it. So it's like, you have to, if you stay in the environment that you're in, you're never going to be able to get anywhere else. It's like, if you have a cup of muddy water, until you start to replace that muddy water with clear water, it's going to stay muddy.
Mm-hmm.
Right? So as much as I want to give advice on that, it's really hard to do because it's so complicated, and I don't want to give people a false sense of hope. Mm-hmm. But I would say, start to become self-aware, start to value yourself, take control of yourself, because you can't change the other person. And once you start developing that awareness for yourself and that compassion for yourself, then you'll realize that there's more and you can get out of that situation. In terms of kids, well, all of us, we model people that we look up to. So when I tell parents how they can bring EQ into the family environment, how they can teach their kids emotional intelligence, if you're telling your kid to identify what they're feeling and address that need, but yet you're yelling at them and you are modeling poor behavior, then nothing you say to them is going to stick. So the parents have to develop their emotional intelligence before they're going to see positive results with their kids.
That's awesome. That's awesome. That's something that my wife works with our kids like a lot, is expressing their emotional emotions without, you know, being really upset, because that's kind of the way she was brought up, and the way she had to deal with her emotions was inside, and myself as well. Like, a lot of in our community, we have to actually hold those emotions inside. So when it is time to express our emotions, you may get it the way that you don't want it. You may, it's very negative most of the time. And it's great. My wife does have a lot of emotion intelligence, because she recognizes that and recognized that in herself. And she teaches and talks to our kids all the time about, like, really expressing your emotions with your words, and really getting that out so people can understand how you're feeling and not have to guess how you're feeling because of the way you're acting.
Definitely. Yeah. And I'm glad you brought up suppression, because a lot of people think, well, I don't show emotion, I don't have emotion. You do, but you're suppressing it. So you're having it, but it's at a subconscious level now. And we run off of 95% subconscious and 5% conscious mind. And so it manifests in the body, and we may not even be aware of it. So if you have neck pain, back pain, if you have arthritis, you know, all these medical conditions that we have, and some people think this is really woo-woo, so that's totally fine if you don't believe in it. But there's a lot of research that's been done where people have these health conditions, and they've been suppressing their emotions for years and not effectively dealing with trauma that they face. And then when they go out and maybe go to a weekend retreat or a week-long retreat where they meditate and where they're given permission to express how they feel, those health conditions either subside or are completely gone. Because our thoughts create our reality. They really do. And if we have negative or toxic thoughts, that releases neurotransmitters in the brain. So all these chemicals in the brain, those chemicals tell our bodies how it should react. And it affects us at a very cellular level. People just really don't realize what they're doing to themselves when they suppress their emotions. It's going to manifest one way or the other.
Well, I do not suppress my emotions when I'm driving to work and I have road rage. So how can emotional intelligence help me with those stressful moments when people just act like they don't want to merge onto the highway and they're like going 35 miles per hour and the speed limit is 65 and I don't understand. Okay, let me just stop right there before I go off.
Do you
have some tips to help me out with that?
Yeah. So, you know what I absolutely despise people saying whenever they tell you like how to manage road rage? They say, well, just think, maybe they're going to the hospital. Maybe they're, you know, there's an emergency they're trying to get to. The chances are that's not true, right?
Right,
right.
It may be the case in some instances, but, and this is like my lack of, I mean, I am not, you know, 100 out of 100 for having emotional intelligence. Like I have high emotional intelligence, but I'm definitely not a perfect score. And so I'm like, no, I refuse to think that way because the chances are likely these people are just a-holes, you know, driving down the road, just not caring what anyone else is doing, not putting anyone else's, you know. So I totally understand that. And it enrages me too. But what I do now is I say, how is this impacting me? So am I going to allow this person who is not self-aware to ruin my day? Because what's going to happen is I'm going to get tense. I'm going to get angry. It's going to put me in a bad mood. And it's setting my day up to start off on a bad foot. And so, yeah, they cut me off. But now I'm allowing them to impact me long term. I'm allowing that to carry over into my day. And so that's the question I ask myself. Am I going to allow them, I can't control that situation, but am I going to allow them to affect me? Because this is doing harm to my body. It's putting chemicals like cortisol and all these stress hormones in my body. That's going to affect me. Am I going to allow them to do that? And that's what I tell myself.
That's
and
awesome.
That helps me calm down.
Man, you're just throwing gems.
You're dropping knowledge.
Gems on gems and dimes. I have to call Brittany Dollar. Shoot. Dropping them dimes on us, man.
So you want to tell us about your book and then tell us about any other upcoming projects you have?
Sure. Thanks for allowing me to share. So yeah, like Jonathan said, it's called The EQ Deficiency. It is out, well, it'll be released on September 23rd, but it is available on Amazon right now. And it talks about, so it's, if you've read any other books on emotional intelligence, this one's totally different. And that's what I love about the book. That was my mission in writing the book, is not for it to just say, this is emotional intelligence and this is how you develop emotional intelligence. Because there's so many books out there that do a great job of that already. What my book does is it looks at current day situations, things that we may label as this person was psychotic or this person is crazy. And it shows you the correlation between their actions and a lack of emotional intelligence. So when you see these events where people just snap, right? Like in Concord several years ago, this guy got shot in the leg because him and his mom walked into the movie theater. People were in the seats that they purchased. They asked them to move. The guy that was sitting in the seat just got up and shot him in the leg. Mm. It's like, that's not a crazy person. That is someone who has all these emotions that they have not effectively managed. And you say, well, that's ridiculous. We can't let people get away with that. It's not about letting them get away with it. But if we want to see a change in our system, we have to start looking at mental health. And mental health does not mean psychosis. It doesn't mean that it's something we can't manage. Just like if we're obese or have diabetes, oftentimes we can fix a lot of that with our diet, right? Mm-hmm. Same with mental health. If we're feeding ourselves negative thoughts and not knowing how to manage things effectively, like our emotions and control them, then we can create our own mental health issues. We can also fix those. So it talks about that first, like how did we get into this toxic state that we're in today in our society? And then it goes into looking at how our mind works, the biology behind it. And then it talks about how can we then be a catalyst for change? How can we start to apply these strategies into our life? So it's a three-part book that kind of guides you through all of that. So yeah, I'm super excited. I've got some great feedback. I sent it out to 20 leaders and entrepreneurs and people across the U.S. and some in Canada as well. And I've gotten some really good feedback on it, which is amazing because they've been applying it at work. They've been applying it in their personal lives and they've been applying it with their families. So it addresses all of that.
That is awesome. We are very proud of you, Brittany. For sure. Please reach out to her if you guys have any questions. Please hit her up on Facebook at Brittany Nicole Connor Savarda.
Yeah, it's the whole mouthful spelled all funky too.
So please reach out to her. Follow her. She has ton of content. She's always dropping new knowledge, new content. Please reach out. A lot of people was reaching out and having her on their show, having her on their podcast. So you're definitely getting a treat. She was also on WCNC Charlotte on Charlotte Today.
Okay.
And, that was pretty dope.
Okay.
So she's definitely out there. And the information she provides is very, very, very much needed. Because at this state of America, I'm telling you, that's... You're in a good crossroads, Brittany, and where we are in America, because we all need this right now.
Yeah, it's a little overwhelming too, you know, because it's like, you know that you're sitting on gold, but nobody else sees it. They just see it as coal. Like, you know how gold, before you polish it and get all the stuff around it, it's just black, right? I think that's what people see. And it's like, no, but I have this gold. You need this. Like, this is what you need. No, I don't need that.
Right.
Yeah. So it's frustrating, but it definitely is needed for sure.
Well,
but thank y'all so much, John Jonathan, for having me on the show. It's been a pleasure. It's so good to hear your voice again too, Jonathan.
Absolutely.
Well, Brittany Nicole Connor Savarda, thank you for coming on to the podcast. Really appreciate it. You could follow us at The Formula Production on social media, Instagram and Twitter, and hit us up on YouTube at The Formula.
Yeah.
And
100%.
Feel free to like, subscribe, share. And Brittany, can't thank you enough.
And Brittany, where are you out on? You on YouTube?
YouTube, Twitter. I have a podcast. No, I never use my Twitter. Like, okay. I have a Twitter, but I just never use it. I'm not a Twitter bird. Mm-mm. But yeah, Instagram, Facebook, YouTube, and then the podcast. That's pretty much my areas.
And everybody can get that book on Amazon, correct?
Yeah.
We'll try to put the link in our description box.
And we'll be giving away three books as well. So you guys give us some comments below. Let us know how this have impacted your life. Let us know what you guys got out of this, and definitely we'll choose three of you guys to get books to.
Oh, thank you. That's so kind.
No problem.
Yeah, this has been awesome. You guys are great. That episode about sushi, though, I tell you, I had to get sushi after that.
Oh,
I miss sushi.
That was our joint, yo. That was our joint.
And that was my first time. And, you know, we haven't gone since. So we need, everything shut down.
Because it's shut down.
Yeah. But we need to go back at some point.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. Absolutely.
So you can confirm that was sushi that I was eating.
Yes.
Okay,
yeah.
Cool.
That was our favorite spot, right?
Yes. God, now Brittany can eat me, too. I can put away some food.
Put it down. Say it again.
Remember when we went to Chima?
She ate us out in Chima's, yo.
Brittany? It was all guys. All guys. It was Brian. Who else was it?
Brian. Jonathan.
Scott? Yeah. Scott wasn't there.
No, Scott wasn't there.
Yeah. And I was like, I'm going to beat all of y'all. I'm going to get the most food. I'm going to get the most plates. They were like hurting. And I'm like, I think I'm going to go back for another.
She was still eating.
Yeah, I can't compete with that. There's no way I could compete with that.
Definitely appreciate you, Brittany. Yeah, definitely thanks for coming on.
Same.
Have a good one, Brittany.
Thanks.
Don't ever let them bring you down, cause then you be on their level.
Listen, I'm never giving up.
Stand your ground, don't be too comfortable or too settled.
Listen, I'm never giving up.
When you hit rock bottom, it's only one way to go.
Listen, I'm never giving up.
Everybody got problems, how you handle them, no.
Yeah.